Okay, are we back on the stream? Well, it looked like it worked. My sense was it was a stimulating discussion. People looked like they're enjoying it, but we'll hear the reports and we'll see how it goes. Sean, would you like to begin? Or would you willing to begin?
Are we back on the stream?
We are.
Not only am I willing to begin, but I'm... since our group, we kind of emotionally bonded, there wasn't a lot of coming and going. So I'm going to ask my friends to also join in this report. We started off talking, you know, Pacifica spends something like $3.4 million on fundraising and development, and we spend $26,000 on promotion. And, you know, folks, if you want to expand your audience, they got to know where you are first. And our big problem, and we were talking about this at the various stations, I've been on the air for 10 years, and every week I tell people I'm on KPFK, and they go, what's that? And that tells us that we need to brand, not rebrand. We need to brand so that people will know where to come. You know, love us or hate us, don't be afraid to listen to us, KPFK 90.7. When we turn it on, then we need the programming that is fearless and will keep them coming back. Now, to achieve this, we talked about a variety of ideas. One, going to our subscriber base, where we do have people with this kind of promotional and marketing talent, and developing from the high end of billboards and everything else, right down to T-shirts and bumper stickers, a coordinated plan. We're not saying that we have to do everything in that plan, but a coordinated plan. Also, the idea was expressed, and I think it's really good. We have to go to our programmers and say, guys, this is partly on you. You know, I do a show for people with disabilities. I need to get out there in the community, and I do this a little bit anyways, and make sure that we can get as much free publicity from the people we work with. You want to go ahead? Yeah, please, Jennifer.
Okay. Yeah, I actually think that should be a requirement of producers, because many producers, or practically all of them, are on Facebook and Twitter, and they're promoting themselves, but they don't promote the station necessarily. So this would be an inexpensive way to promote Pacifica. So I think that actually should be in their contracts. And also, we were discussing using universities, right, and going to journalism classes and making a year-long or however long it took project to promote Pacifica and develop different media sources to, you know, run our programming. You know, in this age where newspapers are sort of folding and people want to be journalists, but they don't quite have access to pursue what they want to do, Pacifica could give them a whole new field. I mean, if we could just stay in business long enough, we could really, really expand it between the affiliates and our five stations. So we were thinking of some kind of internship program where they would develop new media for us and we would give them access to what we have.
Also, the reason that reaching out and perhaps working with universities and different classes, we need to develop a younger audience, folks. Our average age of our audience is, what did they say?
60.
Okay? We need to, yeah, no, I'm almost 62, so don't worry, okay? I'm almost 60, so don't, yeah, right. No, but folks, listen, the right is very powerful today because they nurture their young. They, you know, indoctrinate their young. I'm not saying we need to indoctrinate our young, but we do need to outreach them and put in programming that's in place. And what better place is that than working through the universities? One of our people said that a lot of the professors give extra credit for listening to Pacifica programs, okay? That's a wonderful thing. Also, the lack of investigative journalism in this, you know, Pacifica used to do a lot of investigative journalism. We don't so much anymore. If we were going to journalism classes and dealing with young people, we would let them do the investigations. We would give them the platform to broadcast it. It's a wonderful way to do investigative reporting, and it's also a wonderful way to reach out to the younger audiences. But the important thing is we got to get beyond just the bumper sticker promotion idea. It's not serving all of our purposes. I'd like to see, and we talked about this for a few minutes, at least a test run of maybe putting up, I don't know, a few hundred bus billboards or bench billboards, and do it for 3 or 4 months, and then just look at the arbitrons and see if we're going in the right way. The other thing is, whether it's T-shirts, whether it's billboards, it all has to be coordinated, okay? And does anybody else that I worked with here want to say anything else? Because I know I've left out some ideas. Yes, please, Shram.
I think one cannot overemphasize the idea of having investigative journalism as sort of a hallmark of Pacifica, something that we stand for and what we used to stand for even more so before. And more print media is coming under pressure for the journalists to actually give up the idea of investigative journalism. A lack of resources is being cited as a reason. There's political reasons and so forth and so on. I think we really need to, and this goes back to I have 2 points. One has to do with the programming content that has to do with this notion of investigative journalism. The other one has to do with marketing tools. I think we need to entertain, perhaps start with something like what is not being covered on the commercial media or other outlets that we can cover. And an idea that can be a gateway to having a broader agenda of investigative journalism is to have perhaps on a national level, and perhaps our affiliates can carry this, something like a two-hour program that would wrap up the news in the week, something like a weekend edition or weekend review. I think, and if you do some serious investigative work there and just cover what was not covered on the media. And I think this is the could become a magnet for a lot of listeners to say, well, look, these guys stand for something else. This could become our point of distinction. The other thing is, and I said this before, we have a lot of talents at our disposal among us as a collective, but sometimes we just have to seek assistance from outside in areas that we don't have that sort of specialty. We may have to actually go to some outfit or some sort of a group, consultant group, or somebody who does this kind of work. They do actually do marketing work, or they do assessment of programming, and there are groups like that they actually do that. They do assessment of our grid, and they also give us some recommendations how we can increase our share of listeners. And I'm not against that idea. I mean, we can always try to see if we can reach out to people who can do it on sort of pro bono or at a low cost. But if not, I think I'm all for investigating the idea and exploring the idea and see if that's something we can afford. I don't think it's going to be very costly if you think about what Sean started with by saying how much money we actually spend on other things. So I think the idea should be out there. If you don't find people who do that, we should actually think of budgeting this in our budget items. Yeah. That's
okay.
All.
Thank you. And I'll let Tracy wrap this up. She's got a few things to say, and then we'll take Tracy.
Yeah. It doesn't come unattached. Just to wig off of what my colleagues were saying, we were basically looking at sort of two sort of, needs that we think the foundation has. And I think one of them relates to sort of the overall, we talked about a bit about this yesterday, the brand identity for Pacifica, because at this point, the station that Democracy Now! Comes out of is not enough. they, you know, Democracy Now! Owns themselves. We don't. So I think part of, you know, because really if you're going to put up a bumper sticker, if you're going to put up this, that, or the other thing, there's an elevator pitch of what are you going to hear when you turn the radio on? You know, what is this entity? What's the overriding theme? And I think we need some help in sort of encapsulating that and encapsulating it accurately so when people turn on the radio, they hear something that's what they're expecting to hear. And I think it's a question of, you know, what do we have? What are the assets of this foundation? And what's a way to describe that in 50 words or less that will get across the message of what we're trying to get across? Because it's not just a question of endlessly surveying our existing listenership. It's also a question of proactively deciding who we are and who we want to be and where we're trying to get to. The other part of it is, I think, training our programmers and also holding them accountable, but accountable in the sense of with training and resources and options for doing grassroots, foot on the ground outreach to the audiences that are going to be most committed to their shows and giving them the tools to do that. In this technological universe, a lot of it is free. There are many, many things that you can do. But you do need to do them. You need to do them consistently. You need to touch people all of the time. You need to have volunteers and support structures that allow you to get out to events in the community where you should be. And we need to, you know, give people the tools and the resources and the instructions for how you can do this, how you can do this at low cost, how you do it consistently. And then we can start talking about arbitrons and audience building, but we have to do it in a grassroots programming, you know, programmer respectful way that gives people the tools and then you hold people accountable for using the tools well. You know, once you've shown them the kinds of things that they can do and just sort of, you know, raise the bar for that happening consistently for all programs at all stations.
Okay.
There you go.
Thank you. When we first started this, I threw this out there. I didn't really know what to do with it because I just felt passionate and that something should be done with it. I think it's a bigger issue than we're aware. But somehow I got lucky enough to have the smartest people on the board in my group. In fact, I think the smartest people in the country in my group. So we actually got a lot done. I don't know how that happened. I don't know how that happened, but it just... luck of the draw. Anyway, my group is about the war on civil rights in Arizona, legitimizing racial profiling, and I do find there's some irony when you have the indigenous people being deported by the descendants of Europeans. But there you go. We wanted this whole thing to be something that was all inclusive with the stations, the programming. Programmers, the staff, the listeners, and the Latino Chicano citizens. People other than Latino and Chicanos must join this fight, and just as white joined the fight in civil rights issues to help blacks. People other than brown people must join this fight because this isn't a brown problem. This is a human problem. Kathy said that we have a facility that we're not really taking full advantage of, and that is our affiliate, and that we have a lot of people that probably we could have join in this fight with us, and we could use our affiliates. We could possibly and also please board members join in anywhere. Just jump in anywhere you feel. But Kathy, you want to expand on that particular aspect of?
Well, generally, I was saying that this could be an example of what we could do in a lot of instances is to seek out our affiliate stations in the region so that they can do on-the-ground reporting, they can gather sound locally, they can begin to direct and inform about what the people are doing to, you know, in terms of the protesting and all that, and then begin to gather that sound for the rest of us to take it so that we can't afford to send reporters across the nation, but we have reporters right there and our affiliates, and they can gather that as raw sound and make it available to the rest of us, or even to the point of we can begin to look to our affiliates to generate from the roots some of the national programming that we could offer to to be taken from the five stations. It could be generated at the affiliate level. And I just think it would be an important way. And not only would that help us to build those relationships and give us a pulse of what's happening around the country, but it will also allow us to become truly a network so that we can begin to bring the resources of all these listeners across the country to come to bear on various issues that we feel are important. And we can really build a real communication resource and network that way by respecting that we have, that it's a two-way street. And that the professionals at the affiliate level are just as capable of generating national programming as we are from one of the five stations. And it's just, and in this particular case, I think it would be good to seek out those, because I don't know who the affiliates are in that region, but, you know, to seek that out through the affiliates program and begin to develop these relationships that will allow us to cover things locally that have national relevance.
So to wrap this up, we would need the help of the stations to help facilitate doing this, especially the technical aspect, the technicians in the stations. So we came up with an action.
Your mic is not happening. Oh, it slipped out. Where's
that button? Testing. Thank you. So to wrap this up, we came up with an action plan of so that this is not just fuzzy, good feeling discourse, but we actually want to do something about it. One of the things was we wanted to get in contact with all of our affiliate stations in Arizona to get some input from them and see how we can make this happen. Leslie came up with an idea, and she said she's going to take this to the programming committee to see what we can actually get done and work with the programmers on this. We also want to work with John so that he can see if he can help us make this happen as far as technically speaking.
And the technology committee.
And Otis. And we want to we want to be inclusive with the affiliates, get and have them come in and help with the creation of this so that they know that it's not us looking down at them, but this is something that we're doing collaboratively speaking. We also thought it would be a good idea to create a website for this action, and also to help connect all the different affiliates together, so that we're not just so spread out, but we actually are linked together like a network, and we wanted to also incorporate listeners. Listeners have video cameras. They can get raw materials that we could use. We have reporters all over this country that can bring in materials that we could use, and the content itself will often dictate whether this program is played, as opposed to, because it's my program, it's going to be played. And lastly, we thought all of us are going to Arizona without our IDs. We're going to get deported with the camera showing, rolling the whole time, and go to Mexico and let you see how it's done.
All right.
The smartest people are going to do that.
We didn't hear that. What
the smartest people are going to do that.
Well, actually, it is the smartest people who do it. Yeah. When they started rounding up Arabs and South Asians, a bunch of us in South Carolina actually went to the INS office and demanded that they take us too.
Thank you.
Which they, of course, didn't do.
That's why I said the smartest people.
I personally think the whole PMD gets self-arrested.
Where do you think that request to contact the affiliates in Arizona should go to? Should our affiliates director, or how should that be forwarded?
No, I think we'd have to involve the affiliates director.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Alberto.
Thank you very much for this opportunity, and I will try to be brief, although all of you know I'm not. First of all, I want to thank the group of persons that participated in my little discussion group. We had no board member coming over and sitting with me. Thank you. Oh, Kimmery. Okay, sorry, Kimmery, I didn't see you.
I did.
It's okay.
And I had a couple of listeners from the area here. I had a listener from New York, and I had the interim general manager from Washington having a discussion. There were several issues that were brought forth, and I will report, not necessarily in the same order, but from my personal, politic. In following what the RICO committee or a gathering did, in coming out and talking about racism and the effects that are happening in California, I want to say that as far as my discussion group, we were talking about Spanish language programming within the Pacifica system. And there seems to be, and this is my personal peeve, there seems to be always a very stressful relationship between the monolinguals and the bilinguals within our Pacifica network. And it is understandable.
We're challenged.
It is understandable from Alberto's perspective, having spent all of his life in this continuous struggle. But the first thing that I need to point out to the board is that Informativo Pacifica needs to go back to 5:30 a.m. on KPFK, and I wish we all would chime in and talk to the program director and the board of the wonderful station KPFK, Mr. Velasquez and his team of very professional reporters from throughout the Latin world need to go back to Latino Chicano drive times at 5:30 in the morning, not at 8 like most other people do. They go out at 5:30 in the morning, and they do not come back until 9. They go to sleep at 9 because they got to get up at 4 o'clock in the morning, and having Informativo Pacifica at 10:30 at night is not there. So having given my editorial comment, I want to go back to talking about what we discussed very simply on the other end. Eventually, this Pacifica will gear up to have HD2 and HD3 available for our community. We have figured out that HD2 programming, HD3, I mean, the equipment for HD2 and HD3 in the 4 of the 5 signal areas of the Pacifica network will be coming in the future. We are lucky at KPFT that we have HD equipment already functioning, and we are beginning to slowly fill up, because it's extremely difficult. We all talk about the first 168 hours, but that has been years in the making. At KPFT, we're struggling with the second batch of 168 hours in HD2, and eventually we're going to work out a program. KPFK, KPFA, WPFW, and WBAI eventually will have HD2 and HD3 programming. We are recommending that pressure be relieved, and that eventually, hopefully, when that happens 4 or 5 years from now, maybe that one of the channels be completely 100% dedicated to Spanish language program, and I don't mean necessarily 100% Spanish, but Latino Chicano programming like we do in Houston. We have Latino Chicano programming in English, Spanglish, totally Spanish. Currently at KPFT in Houston, we have about 10 hours worth of public affairs and music. Very small portion, given that 45% of the listeners of KPFT in Houston are quote-unquote Hispanic. And, of course, Houston is now a minority-majority city, with most of the minority-majority being Latino. So our recommendation is let's continue talking about HD2. I've heard people saying
especially in the non-dominant communities at the Pacifica network, that are thinking that, well, if we get HD programming, I mean, equipment, they're going to throw us off the main line and send us off into the Netherlands, somewhere out there in digital space. However, and I will point this out again, HD2 radios are now at around $25 a unit. It is going to become more and more available to all kinds of communities, especially within my community. And we can begin giving very inexpensive HD radios as premiums in our fund drives and get HD2 radios into as many homes as possible so that they can enjoy the extra channels that we'll be able to program. And, of course, and finally, we'll be able to cross program. In other words, we can be sending Channel 1 programmings that are set at different hours into different hours on HD2, and therefore people can be enjoying the same, like me, can be enjoying a program that comes on at 6 o'clock in the morning that I'm not awake. I can listen to it in the afternoon on HD2, and therefore I can get the full scope of programming that Pacifica has to offer so that I can listen when I'm awake, and I, you know, and that's part of the discussion we have. There were several other people in my little discussion group. I don't know if they want to make a comment to any of this discussion, but that's all I have to say to you all. Again, Mr. Velasquez and Informativo Pacifica, back to 5:30 a.m. at KPFK. Thank you. Oh, I'm sorry. Kemery is here to give us some comments.
Just to follow up on Alberto's work focus group, it seems that Pacifica has found a way to exclude people of color by moving programs without notice and not taking into consideration the listenership base, and not only making accessible programming, but we have not making accessible programming for segmented human beings that require alternative program, and with diversity without base of exclusion. And if we have HD 2, 3, or 1 through 10, that we find a way to utilize this valuable technology for listeners that we have alienated for some reason within Pacifica.
Thank you. Campbell.
Thank you very much. The group that we had, I was very fortunate to have Nia Bediako and Alex Steinberg to be participating in, who've certainly provided a lot of good insight and direction, and I'd like to call on them momentarily to make statements in this regard. But we identified, we were able to get a tentative brand. Alex is going to work on getting us a better brand for this topic. It's Truth and Lies About the Confederacy. And we see this as being something that is quite necessary. It follows from a resolution that had been passed by the WPFW LSB, and I think that what we can do is to briefly just share with you some parts of that resolution. The WPFW LSB hereby declares its total opposition to Governor McDonald's proclamation, even though it was revised to address the outrages of America's enslavement of African people. We call on all media and our Pacifica National Board to similarly condemn this action. The resolution called for our LSB chair to work with our station management and programmers to undertake a comprehensive educational program to deal with the hypocrisy of McDonald's Confederacy recognition. This collaboration will be designed to, one, expose the racist action for what it is, two, carry the message on our airways in editorials, tutorials, forums, and town halls, three, urge Pacifica to do the same kinds of things. Further, the resolution indicated that we should seek institutional funding from governments in Virginia, at least, at the same level that it might have provided to the Confederate History Month, and from business and nonprofit sources. For example, we should partner with George Mason University, the Citadel, Virginia Tech, Virginia Commonwealth University, Virginia Union, and such other educational institutions, both in the cradle of the Confederacy and throughout the country. These actions are totally consistent with the mandated Pacifica mission. We additionally came up with the belief that we have three objectives that we can achieve, and I just want to focus on them so that we don't get past that. One is the education and to increase understanding, as we are mandated to do by our Pacifica mission. Secondly is in regards to fundraising and resource development opportunities that are existent in this what would seem to be a problem situation that we can turn into a positive because of partnerships with universities, because of the number of people, and Alex was mentioning several books that point out this issue, people who are in different parts of this educational, historical community who have been outraged by what has taken place and who would be motivated to be engaged and involved in this. This is not going to be a top-down type of thing from the PNB to dictate to any of the LSBs that they should do this or the station management should do one thing or another, although I would hope that it would have a welcome engagement and involvement from our ED on down throughout the structure. The opportunity additionally gives us a means whereby we can spread, as a third area of interest, spread and increase the awareness of people in regard to not just the Pacifica mission, but our local station areas. And this, I think, can be of great benefit. And we will be engaging ourselves in communities that we haven't really been that active in previously. And by virtue of having an issue that we're coming to these communities with, we aren't just saying, well, we want you to do for us. You're saying we can do some things together. And so as in partnerships and joint ventures, I think that some permanent benefit can be changed, brought about for this country. I think that what I would certainly like to do is to ask that PNB adopt a resolution in this regard and recommend that the LSB pass similar resolutions just to establish a position. We're looking as the next steps to establish a task force of the willing, you know, and I will pass a she. And you can identify yourself.
The smartest willing.
Well, in addition to the persons who joined us in this in our discussion group, yes.
Coalition that, of the willing.
Yes. And that we would you don't just have to identify yourself, but you may know Professor Jane Smith at the XYZ University, who is someone who you know is on fire about this or would be on fire about this, and you can put down, you know, your name, and then you will contact Jane Smith, or we can contact Jane Smith in that regard. So these are the kinds of things we're looking at. Those are the kinds of results that we're looking to achieve, and we have already Alex, who's going to be identifying educational contacts in New York and is going to be backed up by Nia. And what I'd like to do is at this point, because of the several issues that were raised about the history of the Civil War and who wrote it and whatnot, I'd like to ask Alex to comment on that.
Thank you, Campbell, and I really want to thank you and the WPFW LSB for coming up with this idea. As soon as you mentioned it, it really grabbed my attention. It's an area that I've been interested in for a long time. That is the rewriting of American history. As I was saying to you earlier, the South lost the Civil War, but the South wrote the history of the Civil War pretty much unopposed throughout the 19th century and for most of the 20th century. The real history of that war and of the events leading up to it and Reconstruction, there were some pioneers prior to the 60s, like W.E.B. Du Bois, of course, and John Hope Franklin. The big dent came in the 60s when you had the what were then called the revisionist historians. So we do have a good historical repository to draw from in telling this history the way it should be told. However, in the popular imagination, none of that ever happened, because guess what? 99% of Americans learn their history in high school from high school history textbooks. And guess what? Those history textbooks were not written by the people who were retelling the history as it really happened. They were still bogged down in a narrative of this history. The Civil War took place. Slavery had nothing to do with it. This was an unfortunate conflict between brothers who, based maybe on a misunderstanding, and there was this wonderful culture that was lost in the South. So, I mean, these kind of events grow out of that. They don't come out of nowhere. This has been going on for, well, since 1865. It's been pretty much uninterrupted. And it's not just history textbooks. There's a whole narrative that's woven into the monuments around this country. There's a wonderful book about that called Lies Across America, which deals with the retelling of history in the monuments. And I haven't been in the South very much, but from what I understand, there's lots and lots of monuments of various Confederate generals and heroes and that's a certain kind of narrative. There's other kinds of narratives about the war against the Native Americans, for instance, that you see in various historical museums and monuments.
Alex, we're running into time constraints.
Okay, I'll wrap it up.
Okay.
To make a long story short, we have an opportunity here not to just answer this one egregious political issue. Because these kind of things come up over and over again. It wasn't the governor of Virginia, it'll be some other governor in some other state. We have to re-educate the American public. And I can't think of anything that's more in line with the Pacifica mission than to do this. And there's a tremendous amount of programming ideas that can evolve from this, and not just programming, but educational efforts. And the mission of the Pacifica is an educational mission. So I think we have a lot of work to do, and I'd really like to get people involved. And this is, by the way, this is much more exciting than finances and audit reports, although, of course, those are very, very necessary.
Okay. Thank you very much, Alex. Nia pointed out something, and I know she's got a lot that she can add, but I just wanted to ask her if she could identify the explicit difference from what had been expressed as slavery and what it should properly be expressed as. Nia?
And again, we are running out of time. We're 15 minutes into what we're supposed to be doing with the affiliates.
I'm used to being in this position. I'll be quick. I always like to say that as an African-descended person, and I guess I have all those other things, but I like to identify with that one most. That's what I look most like. I think it's important that everyone uses the word enslavement or enslaved people, Joe, Alex, Cameron and I were laughing, and I was where's Joe? He's over there, right? And we were saying that there were no Africans sitting on the shores of Africa saying, look, come and take me, or capture me and take me all over the world because I'm a slave. They took the brightest and the smartest people all over the and okay. Okay. So it is important that we say enslaved and enslavement. I know it's sort of difficult to get it out of our system, but I think if we make a concerted effort to do that, because there was no one named slaves. Okay? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. And I'm hoping that this is going to be the launching of an effort that will see a lot of a movement, positive movement. I think that this is something that there are people out in this community, in our community throughout the U.S., that are waiting for us to take the lead on something of this ilk and show what Pacifica is really about in terms of implementing its mission and not just talking about it. Thank you, George.
Most of the discussion in our group was about the most recent amendment to the policy on, I don't really like to use the word recalcitrant LSBs, but it's sort of sticking. The real issue is how are we going to have an organization which functions where the pieces of it, which are the LSBs, are connected to this body in a way that's functional. My original suggestion was that we suspend voting rights for members on this board when the LSB is refusing to do what we ask them to do. People have various problems with that. My sense of that, the purpose of that is, the logic of that is that we have a basic agreement here. All five stations come together to create this body. When we do that, we have a vote on this body because we agree to abide by the votes. Our stations agree to abide by the votes. So that if we are unwilling to do that, if our stations are unwilling to do that, it sort of breaks that agreement. It breaks the sort of relationship that's built into the bylaws. However, people don't really like the idea of canceling people's votes, particularly if they might not even agree with what the LSB is doing. And so Joe's amendment is more about putting the responsibility back on the members of the LSB who, in fact, do not agree and are not willing to do what's being asked. So it provides that they can be suspended for not obeying the consensus decision as to what they're supposed to be doing. And if they continue to be recalcitrant, if they continue to not do it, that they can be removed, all of which is in the bylaws already, that we can do that for cause. One of the things that came out of it, and I think which is really important, is really what we're trying to do with this is to get a consensus in this whole organization about how we're going to function. Anything we do from this end winds up showing up as domination, and we don't want that. One of the suggestions that Joe came up with was, well, you know, we can have a remedy. We can have, suppose it's the case that the LSB really thinks the PNB is off base on this. They're just wrong. What kind of recourse could they have? And the thought was, well, we could have, if we can get agreement from three of the five LSBs, we get that for bylaws changes, that the PNB is offline. Then the PNB is nullified, basically. The directive of the PNB is nullified. So that was a thought that came out of it, out of the meeting. And Joe, do you want to say anything about it?
Well, I'd add that idea, it was a great discussion, a very important discussion about, you know, obviously a very controversial issue. And I do want to credit Marcel for, sparking the thought in my mind as the discussion came along about how to add another component to the check and balance provision that I was trying to come up with, or the due process. Because I think, on the one hand, you have the PNB trying to figure out how to enforce enforce the bylaws, keep the organization coherent, and then there's a tension, which can be a negative tension or positive tension between that and the LSB's feeling differently, and so, you know, there needs to be for example, the KPFK LSB just apparently came up with a resolution that's in direct, you know, or seeming to be. I'm hoping through the discussion we'll find out that it's not at odds with the PNB policy. And so I won't go into. We'll discuss this more as this is on the agenda. All I really want to add now is that I think it was a productive conversation where I think we got to a better understanding of where we're coming from on the issue. I don't know if Marcel has anything to add.
Just one thing. I think that this motion has caused a lot of dissension on local boards. I know our board definitely took this the wrong way, no matter how it was intended. And I did mention that part of governing, no matter what body you're in, is the consent of the people to be governed. And for that to happen, they have to believe that they have recourse. And I don't think that the original motion had any proviso for people to have recourse, and that was part and parcel of what made it so difficult for people to take. And the other is that everyone's voice being stilled because they don't agree kind of takes away the purpose, the energy of this board, which is to rule a group of people who are our one mindset. And after all, we're Pacifica. I mean, and we're used to being betrayed. That's why we're here. So it's kind of foolish of us to just think that we're going to say something and people are going to take it at face value. It makes no sense. We're Pacifica because we know about betrayal. Thank you.
Well, just briefly, because I guess we could say mostly comment on the motion for when this comes up later on the agenda. I'm glad we had this discussion because I had been hesitant to support it, the original motion coming out of the governance committee. But I think we've got some amendments and proposals I think that will really help. And I do understand there is a need to have some way of making sure that our policies and directives are carried out, and that's the whole point for this.
Okay, Summer.
Thank you, George. Mic on. The two issues that that I think everyone knows I'm shepherding and find most important are the general manager search committee issue, because we have four stations that don't have permanent general managers. And the other one is the financial motion that passed unanimously out of the LSB at KPFK. So what I would like is, really lunch and dinner are the only time we have to discuss and work on that, as I would like to invite everybody who's on the general manager search committees at their local signal areas to maybe meet with me during lunch or something. I'd like us to have like a working group so we can discuss the issues confronting all of us and how to deal with them effectively in a lateral fashion between the different stations. And then the other one, maybe we could do it at dinner, is if people are interested. We passed a very simple, straightforward motion challenging the financial accountability policy for stations which are fiscally responsible and operate within budget. We didn't include the extra language dealing with how stations get back to controlling their own money. And, you know, there's language that could be added that we had that we took out because we wanted to give some room for the PNB to work on it. So that's something else that if other people are interested in that subject, I'd like, you know, them to maybe meet with me so we could look at it at this evening or something and work on that. So I can read it to you. Sure. It's very short. Just so you know what it is. It says, whereas the Pacifica National Board approved a policy, FAP, on January 15th, 2010, mandating national office control of all station receipts, and whereas adoption of this policy may have occurred without adequate consideration of its impact, therefore be it resolved that business units that are operating within their budgets, paying their central services bills on time, and providing accurate and timely financial reports shall maintain control of their own bank accounts, both revenue and operating accounts, and the PNB resolution of January 15th should be so amended. We did not include the language dealing with, like, you know, how many months can you be out of compliance before you lose control of your money, or if you've already lost control of your money, how many months do you have to be in compliance to regain control of it. But, you know, this passed unanimously by our board, so this is a huge issue to us, and I would like to invite members from other stations who want to maybe work on drafting, you know, the two additional paragraphs that would deal with those issues to work with me on that today, and I'm hoping to introduce it in new business tomorrow. And the General Manager Search Committee at lunch, anyone who wants to meet and discuss that issue, I'd like to work that out, too.
If you are on the General Manager Search Committee, would you just raise your hand? Also in the audience, if anyone is. Okay, great. So you see who's there.
Okay, so thank you. So that's an open invite for a lunchtime discussion. Also. Okay, yeah. No, I know who somebody. So anyway, that's basically it. I'd like to work with this with the other members today. Those are my two issues, and that's okay. Thank you.